There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday Eve edition of the show. Some people call it Thursday. Phone number and the text line, if you're new to the mix, that's cool. It's 251, if you're not from around here, 251-343-0106. 343-0106 works for a phone call and a text. And if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, which you ought to, it's free. It's waiting for you over at the App Store for iOS users or at Google Play for Android users. Just look for No Point Between the 6 and 5. So just FMTALK 1065. And you'll see our app. It's free. Download it. And one of the many features on there is a talk back feature where you can record a message, emails it to the show, and we can play it back here. Maybe this hour. Maybe you have a question for Baldwin County Sheriff Lowry, who is joining us. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Sean.
I'll put you on that mic. There's the mic. You're on mic three instead of mic two. Good to have you back on.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
A lot to talk about. We left some meat on the bone last month. We're talking about, and I want to get to some of those. But since then, you know, it's been a big story. When you were on last time, you talked about what the change in Washington did for you at a local level, a county level, of when you pulled somebody over. Mm-hmm. Let's say, for example, somebody on I-10. And they don't have a ID,
right?
And they can't prove any kind of citizenship. Can you go back to that? Tell us what it was 6 months ago, you know, during the Biden administration. What it was like after the change?
Yeah. At the end of the Biden administration, Sean, essentially it was a deal where, you know, it's my belief they didn't want any illegal immigrants detained, and so it had gotten where ICE would not come and get someone that was illegal on the side of the road just merely for being illegal. So
the deputy calls
we pull them over, and if we don't have a state charge, we would call or essentially have to let them go, and then the ones that we arrest, we would bring inside our facility under a state charge, and then we would ask ICE if they wanted to deport them. And I will say locally, ICE was very good about being responsive, but we found a lot of those people weren't actually being deported.
Okay. Then we fast forward here.
Right.
Trump administration, President Trump comes in. What was it like then?
January 20th, 21st, you know, the guys and girls in the field really started ramping up operations, and those operations were throughout Mobile and Baldwin County for sure. And a lot of illegals were targeted, and I'll say, when I say targeted, these were people that had warrants on them that they had already been or had been previously told to leave the country,
right.
Ordered to leave the country. And so those people were targeted, and then as a result, obviously there were a lot of collateral arrests along with those from those contacts.
Now, when we talked last time, you said, okay, another thing that had changed, that we're working through this Memorandum of Understanding.
That's right, the MOU.
MOU, oh yeah. I don't know where I got the A from. Oh, that's Minute of Angle. I'm back on the range. So MOU, working with the feds, that, hey, we can hold these folks.
That's right.
At the Baldwin County Jail.
So essentially, we have a contract with the federal government, the United States Marshal Service, to hold 100 federal inmates. And that contract's good. We've had it for 20 years. And it's subject to inspection by the Marshal Service, and we've never had an issue. Essentially, 10 of those beds we held for ICE alone. And ICE could put their people in there, or even their partner agencies, whoever they wanted, could use those 10 beds.
They kind of reserved those?
That's right. Okay. They were reserved for them. But what I had done, knowing that these operations were coming and we were trying to target some of this illegal immigration issues, I wanted to be able to add a few beds to give them the ability to go over 10 beds in case that came up. And obviously in the first week or two,
the numbers
boy
were,
did it,
yeah.
Right? You know, I had to manage my own population of our state inmates and our county inmates versus the federal mm-hmm. population. And things were really going well until Tuesday, not this past Tuesday, but the one previous, we were notified we could no longer hold ICE inmates. That was an order that came out of the Office of Detention Oversight in Washington, D.C.
Office of Detention Oversight.
I know it sounds like a make-believe, but it's true.
It's a thing?
It's a thing inside of ICE, and essentially that we had failed two previous ICE inspections. And again, that wasn't a surprise to us because we knew going in that we could never pass an ICE inspection because they require more things. They're more restrictive than we are with U.S. citizens. And so...
Wait a second. So they are afforded more for...
Absolutely. There are things that if you hold someone over 72 hours as an unlawful detainee or an unlawful entry into the United States...
Illegal immigrant.
Illegal immigrant, right. They're entitled to certain things. And... essentially, we've learned since then that the rules were pushed that way, the regulations were pushed that way, so that it would make it harder to house illegal immigrants in county jails.
So it would come right back to that. But if you had gotten y'all had arrested me in Baldwin County,
mm-hmm.
and I go in and 72 hours I don't bond out,
then you're like every other inmate. We're going to feed you three times a day. We're mm-hmm. going to clothe you, and you're going to be allowed to do all the other things the other inmates do.
But if I'm in, if I'm in the country illegally,
and that was your only charge, you weren't mm-hmm. charged with anything,
that's right.
Then you're entitled to other things that U.S. citizens are not.
Yeah, you see the slack jaw.
Oh, I'm
here.
Telling you, it sickens me to say it. You know what's sad to me is you arrest somebody on a public intox, and it seems like if they can't make that bond in 72 hours or you know, they have to. They're afforded no more provisions or no more rights than the rest of the U.S. citizens, and I'm fine with that. But when you have somebody,
well, I just want everybody treated equally.
Yeah, yeah, everybody's equal, and it just when you have someone that's here illegally and they know they're here illegally, they know they're committing a crime by being here, but yet you have to treat them different. That disturbs me.
But disturbs me as well, and I imagine the majority of people just heard you, Sheriff.
No, well, I would hope so. I would hope so.
So, because headlines, this is why I always tell folks, you got to read beyond the headline, beyond the first paragraph in a story, or listen to shows like this one to get detail. They'll say, well, they failed these two inspections. Mm. If I just hear that, Sheriff, I think, I'm thinking of a live wire hanging from the ceiling and water in a cell or... That's where your mind goes.
Well, let me shape it a little bit for you. We failed the ICE inspections. We've never had an issue with the federal marshal's inspections or the state inspections or anyone else's inspections. In fact, we're one of only two certified jails in the state, nationally certified jails. So what we found out, and I'll say this was Senator Britt's office has been great with this. She really got out front with it. And we found out that in 2023 that a rider was attached to a bill essentially saying if you fail two consecutive ICE inspections, you would no longer be able to house ICE detainees.
We talk about these riders that go on bills in Washington. It might be about something else, but they attach something and it gets through.
Exactly. It slips through the crack and no one thinks about it. So essentially what they've done, they've made the rules and regulations so strict that no one can meet them, and thus no one's going to be able to pass these. So, that's why when someone's arrested this afternoon in Baldwin County, they're going to have to go to Hancock, Mississippi, or Louisiana.
I read that.
Yeah, it's absolutely the truth.
We talk about, hey, by the way, talking about government efficiency, that's not efficiency.
No, you know.
To transport somebody.
And so the federal government, and rightfully so, they're making a push for this immigration enforcement. So now you're pulling in assets from FBI and other mm-hmm. divisions to help. And you got FBI agents, I believe, from our guys, that they're having to transport people instead of doing FBI business. And so not that I want to get in the FBI business,
my gosh,
but it just seems like a waste of resources when we have a jail in Baldwin County that can house them.
Because I want to come back to that, but when they say it failed, and we'll talk about how you undo this, but they say it failed. Once again, it's not some live wire or water. I mean, you talk about surf. It's things that like a rec yard?
Well, so we don't have the ability to have a rec yard. You know, that takes a lot more people to work.
And if
anybody's been in Baldwin County, they've seen it. But we're building a new tower, and so we've been under construction since 2019. So keep in mind, well in advance of this 2023 provision that was placed. And so we barely have places to park. We certainly don't have room for a rec yard. And so until that construction process ends, this is not something we can do.
Yeah, so it says, hey, it's not that the facility as it stands is unsafe or something like that. It's y'all don't have a playground.
We don't have a playground. And I'll say this, they want to force some policy and procedure upon you, again, from the federal aspect, that doesn't apply to county jails. And I just don't want the feds telling me how that we should run the Baldwin County Jail.
Okay. With that being said, so this gets put in as a rider. It's in there. This is a legacy of what happened before Trump got into office. Can it only be done, or do you know, can it only be undone congressionally? Can it
if you're going to change the riders, my understanding, it has to be a congressional act that does this. But now what I do think, and after talking with Senator Tupperville's office this morning, I think that the best way to address this is to just remove the red tape. Make it where jails in Alabama can actually meet the requirements of the federal government, of ICE.
But would that be specifically to the rec yard? I mean,
what you would do is you would remove some of that language there that you have to have a rec yard, or you have to have all these other amenities for these inmates.
But they can go in, I mean, so Congress has to go in and do that, or can it be done
That's something that has to be determined, but I have to believe that if the law's based on the regulations, the regulations should be able to change.
All right, coming right back, more Sheriff Lowry right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Our guest, Baldwin County Sheriff Lowry. I'm going to ask you this one right off our conversation from the text line. Tim said somebody needs to call the new border czar and put the skids to that.
Well, it's ironic you would say that, Sean. Actually, 2 weeks ago, there was a delegation of about 20 sheriffs from the state of Alabama that attended the National Sheriff's meetings in Washington, D.C., and Mr. the Border Czar himself spoke to us, Mr. Holman spoke to us, and he said, essentially, Sean, there were three priorities in his administration. One was to close the border, and I think we can all agree he's doing a pretty effective job of that. What I read this week.
Was it down to like 190 people or something like that?
It's down for the first time in 5 years, back to what the numbers were 5 years ago. So that's tremendous. And the second priority for him was to remove red tape so that these illegal immigrants could be held in county jails throughout the nation, not Baldwin County, but throughout the nation. And then thirdly, the 287G program that we've talked about, maybe off and on, but essentially it's the MOU that we mentioned earlier. It allows us to partner with ICE so that our deputies could directly start enforcing some immigration law. But to do that, you had to reach at least a 4-week minimum training that your deputies have to do before you can enter into that agreement.
A month.
And, you know, that's hard to do, to send a lot of deputies off for a month, obviously. But the third thing that he wanted to talk about was he was going to try to reduce that to 1 week, whatever that 1 week looked like.
Okay. Not only are you a sheriff, you're kind of a CEO of a bunch of people. Is that a lot more workable, 1 week versus 4 weeks?
Oh, absolutely. I can probably send a squad off for a week compared to I can't send a squad off for a month, you know. We still have to protect the people of Baldwin County and calls for service and the things that we do there. So it's much more manageable for us. But, you know, really, it's more manageable for especially the towns and cities that where they're really low on numbers, you know, in small towns in Baldwin County. It would be harder on them to send somebody for a month. And we were excited. I'll say, when speaking to him, he gave us a lot of hope, and I believe everything actually that he says he means. It's unfortunate. I think that he's found out himself that maybe there's some issues within some of these agencies that have been laying there at least a few years.
Yeah, like laying in wait.
Laying in wait, absolutely.
You know, we find out these things, I'm like, I would have never thought of that.
And yeah.
There it is. So with him removing red tape being that second item on his list, and you obviously been on the phone with our delegation in Washington, they give you a timeline when they think they can get this?
No, they didn't. I'll say that they're probably finding out things that I will say they are finding out things I don't know and digging into it. But, you know, the important thing is they're trying, and I know it's a priority for them, and I'm going to trust in that. But, again, they may not be able to quickly change the law. My hope is they can change the regulations and remove that red tape that we talked about and allow not just our jail but other jails. There's some really good jails in the state of Alabama that have the ability to hold these illegal immigrants and treat them like everybody else, Sean, like everybody else.
Yeah, I see the pernicious nature of this because instead of just saying back during the Biden administration, they can't come out and say, we're not going to let you hold them. They're going to just make it to where you can't hold them. And then I think about, you're talking about sheriff's departments around the 67 counties in the state, different budgets. If they got to transport and deal with transport and all that stuff, financially, they probably would just say, I can't do this.
No, you couldn't do it. So
that's a way to affect something like in a backdoor way.
Well, yeah. That's exactly right. You just, as we talked about a little earlier, I mean, you make the restrictions so tight that very few people can do them, and then all of a sudden, I think that's why you see nationwide there's a deficit in jail and ICE jail beds for ICE inmates. I heard the numbers, there's throughout the nation, maybe 38,000, and they were already in the mid-40s on the number of people that were occupying those number of cells. I don't know how that exactly works, but so we started off in a deficit issue, and if they're going to continue to try to cut jails out, it's only going to, you know, increase the problem.
Yeah, I picture this for Baldwin County, but elsewhere, if sheriffs are going to their county commissions in whatever county, Alabama County, Alabama, and they're a smaller county, they're going to go to their county commission and say, I know we're building this new jail. We got to build all these other things into it to be able to take. And the county commission is going to say, no, no, no. You meet state standard here. We're not going to spend it's a hamstringing effect.
Well, and it's not right, Sean. I mean, no, don't get me wrong. We get paid to house federal inmates. So we're not
right,
doing this.
Right, but you've got to spend the money on the front. You know what I'm saying? If somebody builds a new jail.
That has to go towards the debt service or whatever. But again, you know, these are county jails. These are state jails.
Mm-hmm. They passed partial inspection.
We don't need the federal government coming in and inspecting them again. And, you know, we talked about they're already inspected by the United States Marshal Service. To me, that should be good enough for Immigration's custom enforcement. That should be enough. One agency doing the inspections.
You already got a federal agency that's given the green light. And now we're going to send another one in to do the same.
Their primary responsibility is to house federal inmates throughout the country. And so they're the professionals.
Oh, my gosh, the waste.
The waste.
When's DOGE going to get to that, right?
Right.
Susan asked, did the bed stay full in that period of time that you had?
So let me tell you this. I pulled those numbers for us, and the last year of the Biden administration, we actually held up between 25 to 30 on average ICE inmates a month. Of course, in the first 2 weeks of this operation, we were approaching those 30 or so a day that we were housing.
Wow.
And so, and most of those others were people that we had contacted initially that the local people did, step up and were going to deport them, at least to get them to the hearing in Louisiana.
And that's now, as it sits today, that's where they got to go, to Mississippi or Louisiana
right,
to be housed. Susan Goes also said kind of what I said. It disturbs everyone. Why would they get different treatment? You know, this idea. But you explained it. It's because.
Yeah, I mean, it's explained to me, Sean, a little bit like this, that most of our charges are criminal. Being an illegal immigrant in the United States is a civil issue, not a criminal issue, although they're arrested. So I don't know that I understand the difference. I mean,
right.
They're handcuffed, placed in a car, placed in a cell. So I don't know what the difference is there. I think
because you can't detain me on a civil.
Well, I've been asking a lot of questions, obviously, about this. And my understanding is what happens at this hearing in Louisiana, if you're illegally in the United States, you're given the ability to make a bond. And if you can make a bond, you're given an additional court date in Atlanta down the road. Now, where's down the road? Is that 6 months, a year? I'm not sure where that is. I asked specifically about a criminal case, how long, if I had arrested Sean here illegally, but for a public detox, intox, how long did he have to get to Atlanta? And that could be up to 2 years is what I was told.
And I am a strong civil libertarian. So, but in this case, we're not trying to find out. Let's just say the people here illegally. We don't have any other charge. Mm-hmm. You either are or aren't. There's not a proving a guilt and circumstantial. Either you have the documentation or you don't.
Well, and here's the thing that the 72 hours.
Why do we give you a bond? Why don't you just go? Because you're not. And
that's right. Well, so
and you're also not an American citizen, afforded the rights of American citizens.
Apparently, you're afforded those rights plus a couple
more. No joke.
Yeah. So. Anyway, so you're arrested under this civil case now. You're taken to Louisiana. You're able to make that bond. But again, if you're making that bond, you're back out again. So they're not being immediately deported. And that's what because I was really asked that question related to the collateral arrest that we're making. If they have to be told to leave the United States before a warrant is issued. Those were the warrants we were serving the other day. Now, essentially, these collateral contacts now, they are being detained under a warrant by the feds, not by the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office. They have 48 hours to do the warrant and then 72 hours to get them before the judge. That's why we were meeting the 72 hours.
And coming right back, more with Sheriff Lowry and your questions right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and good to have Baldwin County Sheriff Lowry in studio. This question before we went to the news break. I've heard recently that there's a cartel group in Mobile. Is that true?
Well, I got to believe I don't know if it's a cartel group, but there are people that travel through Mobile and Baldwin County every day associated with the cartel. And, some of these groups that even prey on the Hispanic groups in Baldwin County, Mobile County, they have cartel affiliations. I know we make a lot of stops on the interstate, a lot of interdiction stops, and you get drugs or money, and most of all the time, those big loads are directly from the cartel. They're either going or coming.
So, and the idea, we see the Tren de Aragua stories from around the country. I mean, we're talking about it. I think Chrissy Nome was talking about it last night and on Fox. We focused on Colorado. We focused on other places, but they have a presence elsewhere too, don't they?
Well, you got to believe for the past 4 years, the border's been wide open. So they've pushed as many people as they wanted across the border to filter out through the United States. And no, they're not just in Colorado. Obviously, if you look at the map, you'll see that they're in Florida and they have strongholdings in Florida and Texas and different places. And so, we're in between those areas. But I can promise you, they're throughout the entire United States.
And yeah, and that's going to be the interactions right now. I mean, getting these people out, but it's not worth doing. Anything worth doing sometimes is hard, but to say you get the last one, I mean.
Well, anytime you have an action, Sean, you're subject to the reaction that comes from it, and that's going to be part of it. We've stressed to our people that if you're doing some of these detainments that, you need to expect there's a potential for violence. And so that's on a smaller scale from what you're talking about there. But, yeah, it's absolutely possible.
Also, as we talk about the drugs coming in here, I was reading Erica Thomas's story over at 1819 News talking about the and you and I talked about this a little bit before, I think, but the Baldwin County drug testing machine leading to a manslaughter arrest.
The Randox machine. Yeah.
So tell folks about this.
So essentially, the Baldwin County Coroner's Office was able to purchase a Randox machine. And what we learned is these results that we get back from this Randox machine are the exact same results we were getting back from the state. The only difference is we're getting them back in a few hours versus a few months. And so it enabled the sheriff's office and our drug task force to start doing some arrests related to fentanyl overdosing for someone selling fentanyl to unsuspecting, even though they're a user, but they OD on the mm-hmm. fentanyl, so they're poisoned in a sense, mm-hmm. Sean, is probably the best way to say that. And once then, we worked that investigation. Used to be that would be an overdose and a narcotics investigation. Now it's a blended death investigation along with the coroner's office. We're able to know immediately what the cause of death was, what that drug was, and it allows us to handle that from an investigative, a narcotic investigative point of view and try to effective arrest. And I think we're up to six in Baldwin County. I don't know how that stands in the state, but I got to believe that's near the top.
Yeah, so it makes it, it just expedites this?
Absolutely. So it's so important to in a death investigation to have all the information that you can have. Obviously, you'll have a preliminary from the autopsy relatively soon, but no fault of their own that the toxicology from the state was taken several months just from their volume. Dr. Pierce in the coroner's office in Baldwin County, by buying this Randox machine and supplying us immediately with those results, I mean, it boosted our investigations and a lot of time gave us the starting point to go.
I mean, so before that machine, you would somebody's overdose. There's a death.
Right.
And then you don't start the investigation until the information came back.
Well, you would start the investigation, but you wouldn't, the investigators would never do anything with the body. So we wouldn't have any idea of what was in the person, what they had actually consumed.
Okay.
Now, what we would look for, is there a needle there? Is there a spoon there? Is there something like that? And then we would go ahead and do a field test on that, which the field test is not admissible. It still has to, that would still have to go back to the state lab for them to tell us exactly what it was. And in the same time, we're waiting for the blood sample from the person, the victim, to go through the same state process. This Randox machine allowed us to cut a lot of those things out. We have another device called a TruNarc. We're able to tell right there on scene exactly what that is too, and even the percentages of how that drug's made up.
Yeah, you're talking about some of the paraphernalia, but I mean, a lot of this, these pill mills, they took a pill.
Yeah, like, so I'll tell you, that's the way this fentanyl, you know, has been dispersed. It's been pressed into all kind of pills. It looks like a Xanax, or it looks like a Valium, or it looks like something else. And that's why I call it poisoning, because you may think that you're buying a Xanax, even though it's illegal that you're buying it. You think you're buying a mild sedative versus buying the world's most deadly drug.
Listen, this is a conversation I've had many times on the air, and it's, you know, the world is not completely binary. And, you know, I'm a dad and got teenagers and older one, and had to have that conversation at one point. I was like, nothing is okay. Now that I've said that, you know, I've always been, you can't, but by the way,
right,
don't take anything that's, even if you think you know what it is, and, you know, because, I mean, you could sit there and just say, never anything. And kids, like I've said it 100 times, you were also not supposed to be able to drink a beer until you're 21. I think the statute of limitations is mm-hmm. run. I drank a beer before I was 21.
Sure.
But it didn't have something in it. You know, having that conversation, it's kind of a tougher conversation with your teenagers, because you want to just say no means no, but you have to say no means no, and then, honey,
and then
please
understand how the world works, right?
Yeah.
There's that.
If you're
going to
disobey me, don't disobey me this way.
No, and I'll tell you, the pills are probably one thing. One thing that's not as easy, Sean, though, are the vapes. I think you're going to see that as an increased mechanism to disperse these drugs.
Fentanyl and vapes?
Yeah, you know, we haven't had any locally, but I think that's something that we, you know, you're always going to be in fear of. Obviously, we know we have THC in the vapes, and, you know, you can unknowingly smoke a vape with THC in it. I see that progressing to other drugs.
Right, and not to take away from the discussions, even with opioids as they are, we've seen the horrible damage and eventual overdose sometimes, but it's something as parents, let's look at it as parents, not even law enforcement and talk show hosts, as parents, you think, okay, I have a chance to get them, mm-hmm. you know, if they get hooked on something like that, I have a chance to do something before it gets to that point. The fentanyl thing, you don't have a...
You may never have another day with them.
Right. I mean, I'm not trying to dismiss the fact that you shouldn't be touching the thing in the first place.
No, that's right.
But it's in the real world, you at least go, oh my gosh, if they do get on these things, at least I have a chance to do something to change and put them in treatment or something
like
that.
That's right. There's programs, but the fentanyl is so deadly, and it's only going to increase. I'm just telling you, it's only going to increase. And I say that because they're going to find more ways to distribute the product. That's just the nature of any business.
Even though it's poison for the drug trade, it's a better product.
Yes, it's a better product.
More, smuggle smaller amounts, more powerful, more addictive.
Yeah, all of those things. And again, it makes a lot of money for the cartel and the people that are selling it. So they're going to find a way to keep doing that, and we're going to continue to combat it.
You talk about the Chinese involvement in this, and reading stories over the years, one of them that stood out to me, it was like the Chinese, people say the Chinese government's doing it. What I read, and it may have changed, is it's not that the Chinese government's doing it, but they know the exporters of the stuff, and
that's right.
Depending on how they feel about the United States, they either are kind of going after them or they're leaving them alone. Well, you were saying, like,
and that's my understanding.
I didn't
too.
See y'all just leave with that fentanyl going right. to Mexico, you know, or those products to make fentanyl.
I dare say the Chinese border is much tighter than that of the United States, so they know who is coming and going, right. And they know what is going.
And that's what they're doing. They're just kind of turning a blind eye.
You know, this fentanyl and this methamphetamine both are being manufactured in super labs. It's very potent. I mean, it's pharmacy quality narcotics. There's no doubt about it.
And they're not. Are they just sending straight fentanyl in, or are they sending the ingredients and then in Mexico they put them together? What?
You know, I've been in meetings where I think they do a little bit of both, but I think they're producing fentanyl in its purest form and smuggling in with the cartel.
Right. I want to shift gears. We'll come back to that. If y'all have more questions on the text line, we can get to that. I do want to shift gears to something a lighter note, but, you know, it doesn't feel like it today, but spring's coming.
It is,
yeah,
yes.
Spring's coming. When you gave me a stat, I guess it was last time or time before, y'all listen to this. The population of Baldwin County is
almost 300,000.
300,000.
Mm-hmm.
On a given spring break weekend, big, what is it? What does it increase to?
So I'll say this. Dr. Pierce last week spoke, and he said at least 500,000 a day in Baldwin County is a number. And he's actually hired a company to try to get those numbers a little more refined so we have an idea. But you're almost doubling the population.
I mean, yeah, think about that y'all, you know, think, okay, we got this many citizens, and we got people here, and I'm going to have deputies here. And then here's an extra 200,000 that just showed up.
Absolutely.
So in dealing with that, there's all different parts of it. But what I want to talk about, too, is, and we want the people here. We're glad to have them. Mm-hmm. I get people wanting to get in the water. You know, you and I talk real world people. Well, I pull my hair out about people with rip currents and getting in and how dumb it is. You know, people are way more scared of sharks than they are riptides, and riptides kill a lot more people. But you do say, here I am. I live in Chattanooga, and I get a week's vacation, right? And I bring the family down, and dang it, we're down in the sugar white sand beaches, South Baldwin County. I don't get in the dang water.
Well, I mean, it's the most famous vacation movie of all time. Wally World's closed.
Yes.
They're still going in Wally World, right?
Yeah.
And the beach is just that same thing. If they've driven down here and they see it, they're going to get in there. It doesn't matter how many red flags we put up, any of those things, unfortunately. They're going to get into the water, and it's going to start like everything else, a little bit, and then
all of a sudden
it's too much.
So with that being said, obviously your deputy's patrolling as it is now and on the beach and all that, but new asset coming into the mix as well here.
Yeah, so we should start flying as soon as spring break starts. But I credit the governor's office with this, Aaliyah, and certainly the Orange Beach and City of Gulf Shores. That they're stepping up along with the sheriff's office. Aaliyah is providing a helicopter, and so that it'll be a helicopter that, one, will patrol the beach, but two, it will have a rescue swimmer from Gulf Shores and Orange Beach there, so that if we have a swimmer in distress, and we get those calls every day or nearly every day that there's a significant weather event or rip current, and they have the ability to put a flotation device in the water, send the rescue divers straight into the water. And Sean, they're trained professionals too. That's the best part about this. The cities have stepped up and they've trained these people. They're rescue swimmers. They know what they're doing.
So, and these rescue swimmers are attached to that helicopter.
They completely deploy out of the helicopter.
No, what I'm saying is they're attached to it in the fact that if that helicopter's taken off and patrolling, they've got a rescue.
Yeah, they're in there with them the whole time. So the every time the helicopter's up, they're in there with them.
So, and I think about, I don't know what I think we have 68 miles of coast in Alabama. I don't know how much it is, let's say, from Fort Morgan to the Floribama, but
you're probably still talking to 50 miles there, Sean.
Okay.
So,
but a helicopter flying, I'm just thinking how fast you could get to.
So we're thinking even if they're one stream in the other seven or 8 minutes.
Yeah, say they're sitting at Perdido Pass and somebody calls
They should
Fort
be
Morgan.
Able to be within Fort Morgan within 7 minutes or so is what we're thinking. And the good part is, I'll say this, we've invested enough with our our people, and obviously the cities can handle their own because they have rescue swimmers on the beaches, but we have enough stuff that we can deploy, deployables from the beach, rafts, life jackets, those sort of things, to try to do some type of assisted rescue from the land without trying to put deputies into the water.
Yeah, I mean, well, and if you've ever taken advanced swimming courses, lifeguard rescue courses, it's very dangerous when you get next to somebody who feels like they're drowning and you're the person trying to save them. If you don't know what you're doing, you end up becoming someone who drowns as well sometimes.
Absolutely. And you know what happens, unfortunately, there are people that watch this go on and they think that they can help too, because nobody wants to stand by, or most people don't want to stand by.
Of course, because you know
there's
human
a natural
being.
Pull.
Yes.
And so they're going to try to help too. So if they see deputies trying to effect the rescue and doing the things that we're doing, knowing that the helicopter's coming, knowing that Fort Morgan's coming with their rescue people from the fire department, at least hopefully keep them out of the water too, and let us focus on the people that are in trouble right then.
And I like the idea too, if somebody's even further out or they're panicking, if you drop, even before the rescue, if you drop some kind of flotation device, they got something to hold on
That's
to.
Right.
Now you've bought yourself all kind of time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm really excited. I'll say Senator Elliott has got the money for us. It's going to cost about $500,000 just in fuel. That's what the appropriation was from the state. And again, Aaliyah is supplying the helicopter and their pilots and the stuff that the cities are supplying. So it's a really good partnership. Really excited about it. And it's very timely.
Starting spring break, they're going to see this helicopter up and down the beach.
Absolutely.
All right, coming back, more Sheriff Lowry right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Baldwin County Sheriff Anthony Lowry. From the text line, Sheriff, this person said, is there a way to find out if an individual has an arrest warrant out for them? I guess for Baldwin County, is there a process for that?
You can contact our warrants division. Obviously, we don't publish that, so you have to have some identifiers and some stuff that you can't just call and ask, does Sean Sullivan have a warrant?
You need more than that,
but we have a warrants division that can take that call.
Okay, so they would just call warrants the division, Baldwin County?
Yes, they can get the number off our website.
All right. Speaking of which, the website?
It's the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office. I believe we're .org.
Okay.
But anyway, it's under the county commission.
More people reacting to the discussion of rip currents. And it is. Listen, I've talked about it forever. It's heartbreaker, but I'm glad that the sheriff and I can have a discussion. We understand. I don't like it, but I understand why.
Yeah.
The Sean Sullivan from Chattanooga. I mean, I think I'm like, don't do that. But
well, it's harder for us to understand, too, because we lived here and we grew up here and we respect the water.
My parents scared the ever-living crud out of me as a kid.
Absolutely.
That was
and
their
so,
big speech.
Again, I think there's a... People don't appreciate just how powerful the ocean is and all the things that the Gulf is and it can do. But again, you paid a lot of money to come stay on
thing.
This. You paid a lot of money. You're going to get in that water.
So, I mean, we can keep up the onshore, telling people not to do it, put the advisories out, all these things, but knowing that there's a way to...
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a tremendous step up by the state of Alabama. I'm really proud of that. It's going to be a good showpiece, too. People like... aircraft flying up and down the beach.
Helicopters
anyway.
Helicopters are cool, Sheriff.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think it's a win-win situation.
With the influx, too, how do you do that? I mean, you talk about going forward, 300,000 population goes to 500,000 some week. I mean, how do you staff that?
Well, I'll tell you, Sean, it's one of those things. It didn't just happen. So that's
sure.
the fortunate thing we've built up since Frederick, the population steadily increased. And so luckily in Baldwin County, the county commission's addressed those needs and we tell them the numbers that we need. And they've been really good about helping us with that. And the cities have grown, too. You've seen how much Orange Beach, you've seen how much Gulf Shores have grown, new police departments, adding officers, all of those things. So
good stuff. I've got one last call here before we finish up. We'll go to the phones because I see, as you talk about sheriffs out there, a lot of people know this name, Sheriff Jack Tillman joining us. Sheriff.
Yeah. How are you, Sheriff?
Sheriff, you there?
Yeah, I'm here now. I just want to congratulate the Sheriff. He's been there a long time. He's done a great job. I've always enjoyed working with him. and I don't know where to pray for him or congratulate him.
Well, Sheriff, I certainly appreciate that, and certainly I have a lot of respect for you too. And it's a different time, I'll say that, but this is the most rewarding job I've ever had.
I'll never forget Sam called me after he got elected. He said, "What do you do with these phone calls?" I said, "Call them back." And I said, "I learned one story from Coy Smith. I'll never forget. Coy told me, he said, when they start them long stories, here's what you tell them. What do you want me to do?"
I understand.
Well said.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Hey, thank you, Sheriff Tobin. Appreciate that. Yeah, you know, you think about the number of people that have held the job on both sides of the bay as sheriff. There's not a ton of y'all.
No, I mean, actually, Sheriff Mack did the history, and I'm 42 for the Baldwin County. Since the 1800s, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so, number 42.
I mean, so there have been more presidents of these United States.
That's right.
Than there have been sheriffs of Baldwin County.
Right.
You gonna get a hat that says 42? Or
I don't know. That might maybe down the road.
Let's see if we get any of these other. So Ash says a 3-knot current is more dangerous than 150-mile-per-hour wind. Talk about the rip currents. And then Chris says in Orange Beach, flags need to be moved from the end of the boardwalk to the middle of the beach. There are already flag balls out there saying leave on your footprint flags. Or only maybe there needs to be a red flag at Fort Morgan and 59. There's already an unused flag ball and much larger one at the tee entering the golf place.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I'm not against any of those things. I think that the more signage, the more communications, text messages, I'm for all of those. But at the end of the day, I think it gets down to that person making a decision that they're going to get in the water. And,
yeah.
I would dare say you could probably write them tickets. You could, you know, arrest. But you're not going to stop it. You're still going to have those people that do it.
No, and that's reality. I mean, we can still push, and you will affect some people who won't do
sure,
it. But
sure.
To expect that there's not going to be, because I scratch my head every year. I'm like, well, you got in the water, the flags are up. But then if you think about human beings, we're all human beings. Well, dang it. This is vacation. I got to go back to work, and you know, we're here, and it's the beach. And
you earned your way there. You earned the money to get there. You know, you earned the time off, all those sort of things, and to be able to go down there and experience it with your family. I get it. You know, I completely understand it. But, again, there's just times where it's so dangerous. And that's why, I'm thankful for the people that are willing to step up and participate in these programs.
I can't wait to see the helicopter up and flying. It's going to be good stuff.
Good stuff.
As always, Sheriff, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with us.
All right. Thank you, Sean.
All right. Baldwin County Sheriff Anthony Lowry, our guest coming back. Brady Petrie from Landnap, a lot to talk about with him. We'll talk about the number of names. Now another one in the mix in the Mobile mayoral cycle. That is straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile.